All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, week one of the off-season edition, as it is all over now. 272 regular season games, 13 playoff games, the final one of which was the Super Bowl this past weekend. The Seahawks are the champions of the National Football League for 2025, and we're done. And now we stare down the barrel of all the things they line up for us just to keep it entertaining, whether it's the combine or then free agency, the draft, the schedule release. Eventually comes training camp and the cycle will begin all over again. But congratulations to the Seahawks. Whenever you don't win, you don't feel good, but you have to tip your hat to whoever does. And the Seahawks, by the way, become just the third team since the Bucs' inception 50 years ago. This was the Bucs' 50th season. And now in only three of those 50 seasons has a team lost to the Bucs in the regular season and then gone on to win the Super Bowl. And it didn't happen at all until 2009 when the Saints did it. Then it didn't happen again until last year when the Eagles did it. And now it's happened 2 years in a row after only happening once in the previous 48 years. But the Bucs go up to Seattle, light up that defense we're all talking about this week is, oh my God, what a masterclass. What an absolute legendary performance. Just an absolute lockdown. No team had a chance against this defense the entire postseason. And hey, what'd the Bucs do back in, what was it, October, I think it was? Feels like forever ago. Just absolutely lit everybody up that day. And they went into Seattle and won 38-35. And if I had told you that day, when that game happened, that the winner of the Super Bowl was playing that day, which team was it? You would have bought either one. I mean, you certainly could have saw it either way. But I would have definitely believed you if you had told me the Bucs instead. Well, not only was it the Seahawks and not the Bucs, but the two teams went in completely opposite directions after that. And it hurts. It always hurts. But it hurts more when you see what the team that won did. And this was a season in the NFL, folks, that, you know, every season's different. Some seasons have a legendary, or even a legendary, but some seasons have a really dominant team or teams. And some seasons the level feels higher. I have to say, and I'm not just trying to sound like sour grapes, because this applies to many seasons besides just this one where the Bucs didn't win. It just didn't feel like anybody was that good. That was a great defensive performance the other night. It really was. And not just the other night, but the Seahawks defense really got a lot better all throughout the end of the year and then into the playoffs. Mike McDonald, hell of a job, you know, all that stuff. But with that said, like, it didn't feel like anybody was that good this year. It didn't feel transcendent. Basically, the Super Bowl itself, I'll tell you what, and I always like watching the Super Bowl. It's the Super Bowl. We're all football fans. It's the Super Bowl. But it felt like, even as it was happening, like one of those Super Bowls and one of those seasons that you're going to forget about 15 minutes after it's over. And there's some that stick out in your mind over the years, and there's other ones that are like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I forgot. Yeah, that this one feels like just one of those, oh, yeah, Seahawks-Patriots, the second one. You know, like 10 years from now, we'll remember nothing and barely talk about any of this season. And it's funny because I was on Twitter. I'm often on Twitter. You can see me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day. Same with Blue Sky, B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y. But I saw a tweet from Barry on here, to give credit to who it was. And it said, everything considered, I think 2025 might have been the worst NFL season of all time. And you know what? And I'm not going to go that far. I mean, there was a strike year in 1987. I remember when I was a kid when, like, they used replacement players. And there's been some other years that I just remember nothing about. But this was really, truly an unremarkable NFL season and postseason. I know there was some good, I mean, there were some really good games in the postseason. Like, there was that incredible Rams-Bears game. And, of course, there was the Seahawks-Rams. The NFC Championship was a good game. I mean, there were some good games, but, like, I was watching that Super Bowl this week and watching the Patriots look like a monkey trying to hump a doorknob on offense for four quarters and play the most just jaw-droppingly boring brand of football where, like I said with the Bucs too, dungy ball. You know, like, hey, we need to win this game with 13. It felt like Mike Vrabel said, hey, the only way we win this game is with 13 points. We're not going to score more than 13 points. We're going to try and win it with 13 points. Felt like that was the way the whole way until Seattle pulled away late. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, how much more exciting would this have been if the Bills had been able to get in? Even the Broncos. But, and nothing against the Patriots. And the Patriots came into Tampa and beat the Bucs' ass. I mean, not badly, but they beat them. But man, and you know, people say, "Oh, I'm ready for a change. I don't want to see the same teams over every single year. And I'm enough of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. I'm tired of it." I would have hell of a lot been more entertained if it had been Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes on Sunday, this past Sunday, than freaking that Patriots offense. And I love Mike Vrabel, by the way. If it sounds like I don't like the Patriots, that's not true. I love Vrabel. Love him. I'd take him as the Bucs coach in a heartbeat. That's not the point, though. The point is, like, the Bills would have been such an incredible story, you know, trying to finally get over the hump. Really wanted to see them win that game against Denver. But even if Denver had won, you know, anybody but what happened, you know? Like, that was just really... Barry on here on Twitter wasn't that far off. This was a really unremarkable, unfulfilling, unsatisfying NFL season. It feels like the pendulum's swinging back. We had a lot of excitement. Teams were pass happy. Offense was the thing. And now it's starting to feel like the pendulum is swinging the other way. And it's hard. Like, people aren't scoring points. And I don't play fantasy football. It just doesn't my thing. I've played it before, but it's not my thing. But people I do know who have played it, it's like... Even just total fantasy points are down, right? Aren't they? Like, compared to years past? Like, just there isn't just as much happening out there. Defenses are getting to be so good. And obviously, there were some weather concerns with some of the postseason games and things like that. But yeah, it just didn't do it for me compared to the number of things we could have seen. I thought it would have been more exciting. And, you know, I think it says a lot. Like, what is the signature play of this NFL season? What's the play that defined this NFL season for you? Because I can tell you what it is for me, and it literally is the play that may have decided the NFL season, okay? It was back on Thursday Night Football in December, the Seahawks and the Rams, when the Seahawks were down by a bunch late and trying to come back, and they were down by 8, and they scored, and they went for 2, remember? And Darnold throws that little quick screen to the flat. It bounces off some guy's helmet. The play is immediately dead, like the worst play ever, like just complete failure. And then the whistle blows, and then after the whistle is blown, Charbonnet for Seattle, not even thinking, he's not even playing. Everybody's standing around, just walks over casually and picks the ball up. And then after the fact, they rule, oh, well, that's a live ball, even though we blew the whistle because it was a backward pass. And since he picked it up and nobody else really tried that hard to pick it up, we're going to give them the two-point conversion. And that allowed Seattle to tie the game, and that allowed Seattle to go to overtime and win, and that allowed Seattle to have the number one seed while the Rams had to drop all the way to the 5 seed, and that allowed Seattle to play one fewer game than the Rams in the playoffs, and that allowed Seattle to host the game in the NFC Championship game when they played again, and that allowed Seattle to win and go on to the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying I know what would have happened if they had ruled that play correctly, because to me it's just utterly ridiculous. It's the most NFL thing ever, but it's just utterly ridiculous that they literally blew the whistle on the play and then they let something that happened seconds afterward when nobody was trying to compete, like there was literally no competition happening, and a guy just walked over casually and picked a ball up, and that play ended up determining, very likely I should say, determining the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl champion. Because it's a totally different deal if Seattle doesn't have the bye and the Rams do, and then the Rams host Seattle, they don't get to play at home. I mean, that play defined the NFL season to me. It had everything from top to bottom. It had shaky officiating. It had a questionable ruling. It had review delays. Huge consequences, like so many of these plays do. All the things we've gotten used to in the NFL. And just, man, and the ultimate feeling of unfulfillment. Like, that, it had everything. Like, that play really, that's, when I think of the 2025 NFL season, that play defines it for me. And so, we get the Super Bowl we got, whatever. To me, it was just, like I said, I walk away now, and I'm still dying for the next football season. If there was a game this weekend, I'd be clearing my calendar to watch it, of course. And let alone, we've got another 8 months now till anything of real substance happens. But that was the kind of year it was. And it doesn't mean, I mean, let's say the Rams, let's say that game stays 40-38 or whatever it was. Let's say they don't count that two-point conversion. We don't know. You know, Seattle still may have won that game. Or even if they didn't, they still might have beaten the Rams in the playoffs and gone to the Super Bowl and all that. I have no idea. But I do know it was really disappointing. But I'll tell you this much. And this is the reason I always say football is the most fan-friendly game, the most television-friendly game, the most exciting game. First of all, the game of football itself is that. But second of all, the structure of the way it's set up, the week by week, the small sample size, the incredibly huge swings that change not just your win outcomes or your likelihoods for individual games, but whole seasons that are all the way through from the first kickoff of the first game all the way to the end. Unlike baseball or unlike hockey and basketball, who have really long seasons and huge sample sizes, and no one thing is the thing, you know, no one thing is what determines it. So many things go into it that it all evens out, and it's a sample size thing. With football, it's not. Like, one play in a week six game, one play where maybe you don't score on third and four and you settle for a field goal instead, that literally could change your season. And it's like that every game the entire time. And it's maddening, but it's also really entertaining. And I think about these playoffs. Like I said, I mean, again, credit to the Patriots. They won, you know, whatever, umpteen games in a row to get there. They did it somehow, some way. They kept overcoming odds. But, man, that the Bills-Denver game, like, that interception that was called, that the Bills thought it should have been a catch and down by contact. I mean, we're talking about literal milliseconds or millimeters, not even inches, like, that decide these things. And it changes everything. And even once Denver did win that game, you know, New England did nothing offensively the entire playoffs. I mean, they had a decent okay outing against the Chargers in the first game, the wild card round. Did nothing against the Texans. The C.J. Stroud and the Texans handed them five turnovers. And these are good defenses, so I'm not criticizing the Patriots. I'm just saying that the offense did nothing. Then, of course, AFC Championship game, what happened there? One touchdown. Okay, and everybody talks about Sean Payton and going for it or not going for it, which I think is overrated. What was the play of that game? Denver, on a third and long, where they probably weren't going to do anything anyway, and the play clock is running down, and Bo Nix is yelling and screaming and like, Stidham, not Nix, he was hurt. And the Broncos should have just called a timeout and, you know, not even worried about it and just, you know, ran some play. If they punt, no big deal. But they're running really fast and disorganized and just trying to get the play snapped off. And then there's a fumble, and the Patriots pick the ball up, and they get set up at the 10-yard line, and they score the only touchdown of that game. And that play put them in the Super Bowl. Without that play, Denver wins the game. Again, just, I mean, that's how fine the line is. That's how random it all is. And that's the difference between the way we perceive people, coaches, players, and whole teams over decades and generations from now when we talk about this stuff. Because you immediately remember only the outcome. You only remember who won. Very rarely do we remember the process. Very rarely do we remember how close it really was or how random it really was. And the losers get forgotten, whether it's this year's Bills team or this year's Broncos team, which no one will remember, let alone the Patriots themselves who didn't win the Super Bowl. But man, maddeningly random, maddeningly, you know, fine as the line that decides win from loss, and you know, generational memory from forgottenness. It's just, like I said, it's the most entertaining thing ever because of how close it all is and how it could go either way and how any one play could decide it. But man, if I'm anybody today who's kicking myself, it's not the Patriots. They didn't have any chance to win that game, as it turns out. I'm kicking myself if I'm the Broncos watching that game saying, how in the hell did we not get this done? Or I'm kicking myself if I'm the Bills saying, how in the hell did we blow that game to the Broncos? We would have absolutely crushed the Patriots. We could have gotten them the third game. We'd be split with them. We would have beaten them the third time around. You know, and maybe the Seahawks still beat those teams too. I don't know. But that's how it felt. So anyway, it's all over now, and as Bucks fans, we turn our attention to our team and the offseason and what is about to come. And the Bucks, you know, they were at a crossroads here. They started 6-2. We know how the season ended. By the way, sometimes time heals wounds, and as a few days and weeks and months pass, you kind of relax a little bit, and you look back and say, oh, well, hey, it just wasn't our year after all. And I don't think the Bucks were a Super Bowl team by any stretch, obviously. But I will say this. I think I feel worse as a Bucks fan now, removed from all this, realizing just as it was happening in real time, you know, we're just so focused on the next week. And, okay, we lost. They win again next week. We can still get in the playoffs. Okay, we lost again. Let's win again next week. Okay, we lost the fourth one in a row. Can still do that. And you're just caught up in it. Now removed from it by about a month, looking back, what an absolute disaster the Bucks 2025 season was. I mean, just unmitigated. Unmitigated, and especially seeing Seattle and what the Bucks did with Seattle back in week whatever it was. And then now that it's all over, looking back, like, what an absolute colossal collapse. And, you know, I look at Baker Mayfield's injury, which we'll never really, or maybe never is a strong word. Maybe we'll know one day, but we probably won't ever know exactly how much it was affecting him this year, and the offensive line injuries and things like that. But I look at the team the Bucs were when they were winning those games. And I know they won some close games. I know they were probably lucky to be 6-2, but they were a good team playing against other good teams, and they were running and gunning. They were pushing the ball down the field. They were trying to score points, and they had a semblance of an attack on offense. And I look at what happened to them and how they turned it into dungy ball. I keep using that phrase, but it really is true, over the final half of the year. And they kept really, I mean, you got the feeling they weren't trying that hard to score points. They were more obsessed with ball control and time of possession and the running game. We're establishing the run. All those buzzwords that are code for our offense sucks, basically. Whenever you hear offenses say that, whenever you hear teams say that, it usually means either, A, we have an unbelievable defense and we can win as many games as we need to and maybe even a championship doing it this way. That's one thing. At least with Dungy Ball, that was kind of the way. Or number two, which more applies to this year's Bucks team, is, hey, we can't score points anymore. Whether it's because of the quarterback injury or whether it's because fear. Like, you know, it seemed very fearful. It seemed like an offense that was very rooted in fear of something bad happening and not the idea of wanting to get something done and actually score. Like, I think back to the Seattle game and when they hit Ibuka in the back of the end zone on that post route. And, like, that was probably the zenith of Bucks football 2025. That was just the good stuff right there. And I think of all the games that followed that, whether they won or lost, it seems like the score to every Bucks game after the bye was 23-20 or 20-17. That's what it felt like. Like, every game was like, and just, man, what an absolute cluster bleep. And so someone had to pay. It wasn't Todd Bowles. It was Josh Grizzard, among others, on offense. But they, as you know now, it's been talked about, a full staff shakeup. Actually, I didn't do a show the last couple of weeks because I was just busy doing stuff, and I apologize for not getting a show or two out there since the wild card round, and I didn't do anything with the Super Bowl and all that. But anyway, since we've talked, Zach Robinson's the offensive coordinator. They have a whole slew of coaches who are new. Chandler Whitmer, the new quarterback's coach. They fired several coaches on the defensive side, promoted others. Danny Smith from the Steelers, like I said, they made the move on special teams and all that stuff. So some moves had to be made. Now, whether you think, and I said this at the time on Twitter, you know, just, I'm not saying I wanted to fire Todd Bowles or I had some bloodlust to do it, but I do think it's weird that you say, hey, it's all cool, we love Todd Bowles, but then you make him fire. I'm not saying he necessarily wouldn't have fired some on his own, but he was also told that he had to fire some people, let's be honest. Something had to change, basically. So it's just weird that you say, no, we love our head coach, just all the people that actually coach the team beside him, let's just change all that. And the offensive coordinator thing, I said this, I did say this on my show the last time I did a show. You know, I don't know how much to blame Grizzard and how much of it was him being handcuffed, but however, whoever was responsible for the offense, whether it was, again, coming from places besides just Grizzard or whether the buck stopped with him, you know, that obviously had to change. And I do like the Zach Robinson hire. I know everybody was talking about Mike McDaniel and all that stuff, and that's, you know, that would have been great, and I love Mike McDaniel. That was never really going to happen, and I think Robinson, given his history, given the type of offense he likes to run, given that he's been with Baker Mayfield before, and Baker Mayfield certainly had input on this, I think it's a solid move. And I'm actually looking forward to the Bucs offense and seeing what they can do. We'll see who the personnel are. Mike Evans is still up in the air. I think he's going to come back. But even if he does, you know, you don't know what you're going to get necessarily, although he's been producing when he plays. I mean, he had injuries this past year that didn't seem like they were a result of old age. The injury he had, I mean, it was a traumatic injury that would have hurt anybody, I think. And so hopefully he's still got enough in the tank where he's effective, and I think he will be. Godwin, you don't know. Again, he battled injuries, and he was slow getting back, had to kind of, you know, failure to launch at first, and had a second comeback, and then did better then. Excited about Ibuka. You know, that looks like they got something there. The offensive line, healthy, I think, will, you know, make a big difference. That was a huge factor in all the stuff we've been complaining about on this show over the second half of the year. So I think there's a lot to be excited about. And, you know, the Bucks pick 15th in the draft. Defensively, they have a lot to address. And here's the thing, and we've got all spring now to talk about the draft coming up. It's not till late April, and we've got the combine and all that stuff. But here's the thing. Okay, 15th pick. You can get a good player at 15. I'm fine with that. But you can only get one. You know, like, the Bucks have so many needs, and you can't take care of them all. It's one pick. Kind of like last year, which we thought we needed a pass rusher, which we did. And they went with Ibuka instead. And everyone's like, huh? Ibuka's great. I mean, I'm glad we have him. I would not change the pick. But then we didn't get, you know, we didn't go get that other guy because you can only get one person at a time. And you have to wait a whole round before you can go again. And so now here we are again. Bucks need help at edge. They need help at regular off-the-ball linebacker. Their linebacking situation. We'll see what happens with Levante David, who I love. And if he comes back, great. But it really doesn't change anything whether he comes back or not. The Bucks are really, really, really deficient at linebacker. It was the biggest reason to me besides, it was those two things, pass rush and middle linebacker, why their defense was so bad. In fact, Joe put up an article on JoeBucksFan.com talking about, I think the Bucks are ranked like second to last or dead last in the league in passes to the flats and yards allowed. And that's their middle linebacker core. And you could see it in real time happening through the season. Levante David running out to the flat to try and tackle some really nimble running back, catching a ball out of the backfield, trying to break his hips down and getting, you know, a guy making a move right around him. Servossier Dennis, you know, we were hoping maybe he'd be that guy. I know he had injuries in his first couple years, and we were excited. And all preseason, we were talking about, oh, that's going to be a big difference maker, having him back healthy. And atrocious in pass. They need a pass coverage linebacker. They need probably two or three, really, but you can only get one at a time to go along with pass rush. I mean, they need a lot of things, and we'll see if they're able to address them one at a time. And you can get good players, obviously, with your second and third and fourth round picks. Jason Light has done that plenty of times in the past. He's going to need to do it again, because the Bucks have a lot of needs there. And in the meantime, you know, nothing's going to happen in the immediate future with Max Crosby, Trey Hendrickson. You know, Crosby is somebody they'd have to trade for. I know there's been all the talk about it. I'll believe it when I see it. I don't feel like it's going to happen. Here's the thing with Crosby and Hendrickson, though. Crosby, still under contract for four more years, and he's due $30 million in 2026. So to get him would be a hefty price tag. And when I say price tag, I don't mean just the actual money. I mean the actual commodity you'd have to let go to two first-round picks or all that stuff, a second-round pick. You know, there's that. Then there's Trey Hendrickson with the Bengals, who can be had as a free agent and who would require financial capital, but you wouldn't have to trade anything for. Now, he'll have a lower price tag, but what's the difference? Well, one, he's a free agent. More importantly, though, he's cheaper. Why? Because he's 31 and Crosby's 28. And we know, if you've read Joe Bucks Fan, if those of you who haven't, I mean, Joe's talked about it before, they've done studies on, you know, position by position where guys decline with age, because our position's the same. We see quarterbacks into their late 30s and even 40s, of course, we know that well, perform at the highest level in the game. The MVP's Matt Stafford. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl here when he was in his mid-40s. Quarterbacks can do that. But positions that rely on not just athleticism, but fast twitch stuff, like receivers and even more important, even more than receivers and DBs, who relies on fast twitch the most? Pass rushing ends. And so from history, doing research on other players, they did a study on this. Pass rushers seem to peak about their late 20s, and once they hit 30, it goes down, and it usually goes down. And not always. I mean, we've had guys in their 30s perform off the edge, but that's the age when guys start to not be their old selves. So that's what Trey Hendrickson is, 31. He's certainly be an upgrade over what we have now, for sure, but he may not necessarily be the Trey Hendrickson you're used to seeing out there, or what Max Crosby still has a couple more years left of being. And like I said, times change. Guys get better. There's better technology, better training. That age might creep up to 32 or 33 in time. But from what we know historically, you know, around that 30 age, 31-ish, is when pass rushers start to kind of lose. And you don't have to lose much. It's not even visible to the naked eye. They still look great. They still move great. But at the level they're playing at, even if you drop from the 99.8 percentile to the 99.2 percentile, that'll make you look pretty ordinary quick because everybody else around you is still, you know. So we'll see if they make any moves there, if they rely on the draft. Jason Light typically relies on the draft, and there's going to be a bunch of guys that can be had. We're going to go over them all in the coming weeks on the show, believe me. All that stuff is out there. But, man, I'll tell you what. The Bucks have a lot they got to do on their shopping list. So what I know people have been talking about this a little bit. The Joes talked about it on the website. 2008 season was the year they were, 9-3, right? Lost four games in a row, finished 9-7, missed the playoffs, fired Gruden a few weeks later. And what happened after that? What we call the lost decade, and it was a little more than a decade, but the Bucks then did absolutely nothing from 2009 through 2019. So it was 11 seasons. Just we entered the – we didn't know at the time. That's the thing. You look back on it now. We didn't know at the time, but that roster had kind of aged out. You know, all the Super Bowl guys had gone. Gruden, even though we weren't happy with him, he had him at a certain level. They at least won the division a couple times after they won the Super Bowl. And then they were going to win it again, it looked like, in 2008, and it didn't happen. And then, whoop, that was it. I mean, as a Bucks fan, I've been a Bucks fan since I, you know, was old enough to talk in the early 80s. So I've seen every season, and I remember almost every season. I can't tell you anything about from 2009 to 2019, I have so few memories. Like, I have like a photographic memory of like the games in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s where like I can remember exactly, oh, that, yeah. Some random game in 1995 I can tell you about with Sam Weish or whatever. And you just pick a random year of the 2010s and say, hey, what was that Bucks season like? And I'd be like, I got to go on Wikipedia and I have no idea. Even games I was at in person, I have no recollection of. Like, that was a completely lost decade. Now, I'm not saying the Bucks are about to enter that now. And the NFC South still doesn't look like gangbusters. The Saints are still a little ways off. Although all of these teams were even, let's be honest, pretty much all four of them were barely discernible. The Falcons, I'm a little concerned about with Stefanski. That was a really good hire by them. Obviously, their quarterback situation isn't settled right now. Cousins is moving on. Penix coming off the injury. We don't know when he's going to be ready again. I don't know what their plan is. We'll see. Carolina with Canales, they've, you know, got it going a little bit, but still nothing to write home about. All these teams are all just mediocre, but somebody does have to win it. And as of right now, this moment in mid-February of 2026, looking ahead, I still don't see any reason why the Bucks don't have a pretty good chance to still be that team again. If they can, you know, make a few additions and get a few things right. Because there is talent here, and they, you know, they didn't go 6-2, and they didn't beat the Super Bowl champions in their own house in a stadium where nobody goes and wins. In fact, nobody else did after that game the rest of the season. They didn't do those things by accident. Those weren't flukes or weird upsets. The Bucks were a good team for points of this season. And then obviously some circumstances got in the way and their offense decided to shut it down. And let it be said again. I'm going to say it right now, guys. And looking at what needs to be done, most of it's on the defensive side of the ball. Agreed. But looking about who to blame for 2025, looking at the way those games ended up and looking how it all ended, okay, we bitched right and left about how bad the defense was, and yet point totals in the second half for all these games, 23, 20, 17, 16. You know, the Falcons scored 29, that horrible Thursday night football blown lead. That was the one I'd really put on the defense. All the rest of those games down the stretch, that was the offense letting this team down. Specifically, them not even attempting to push the ball up the field and score any points. You know, it pissed me off. It pissed me off. I was watching that NFL awards show the other night because there was nothing else on. And, you know, offensive rookie of the year, Ted Aroa McMillan. Okay, great. Good for him. That could have been Amika Abuka. That should have been Amika Abuka. It was Amika Abuka the first half of the year. And then we stopped trying. We didn't throw the ball to him. We didn't throw the ball to anybody. We threw bullshit quick screens and ran the ball on 15 consecutive first downs. And thought that was the way to win. Thought that was the only way we could win. That's what it felt like. It felt like they thought, no, we can't do it anymore. We can't do it. We have to try other ways. And we have to try and dumb it down. And we have to try and beat our head into a wall over and over and over. And maybe outlast somebody and win 17-13. It felt like they thought they couldn't do it. And then I see McMillan winning this award. And I thought back to that graphic in the first Carolina game up in Charlotte that they showed at halftime. Remember that? where it said like targets first half and like Abuka one target, zero catches, and then McMillan was like 13 targets, eight catches. Like, yeah, they're trying. They're actually freaking trying to do the thing. And the Bucks stopped trying on offense. And that'll be the lasting mark to me of the 2025 season. In spite of all the teeth gnashing and hand-wringing about the defense, it'll be that. So, excuse me. I'm excited about Zach Robinson, if for no other reason than that it's just going to be different. And maybe Grizzard, and it's not his fault. I mean, you threw a guy in, you lost guys you didn't think you were going to lose, and you had last-second replacements in Grizzard. I'm not saying he wasn't any good, but maybe he just wasn't ready. But it didn't work out. And it looked like it was working out at first, but it didn't work out. And so with Zach Robinson, you got a proven guy, a guy who knows how to work with Mayfield, a guy who I think will better employ the weapons we have, because we do have weapons, and I'd like to see them. You know, I wouldn't even mind if we just couldn't do it, if the Bucs just weren't good enough. But what I hate is the, you know, reticence and the reluctance, I should say, to just and let Mayfield be Mayfield. Let him do what he does. And again, his injuries may have been a part of that. I totally acknowledge that. We don't know for sure and probably won't exactly how serious they were or what was stopping him. But either way, here we are now. So we got a whole offseason to talk about it. And like I said, I love the other sports. There's an Olympics going on right now, which I love when there's Olympic years because it helps fill up that February when there's a Winter Olympics. The Lightning are kicking ass. It's going to be a great home stretch and great playoffs, I hope, for them. And then we have Rays baseball, the Masters, Kentucky Derby, all that stuff. You know, there's stuff on the sports calendar. But there is nothing like football. It is the greatest sport in the world for so many different reasons. And when it ends, no matter if it ends happily or not, even when the Bucks have won Super Bowls, I've always stopped there, you know, when the Super Bowl is wrapping up, thought to myself, oh man, you know what, it's going to be eight more months. And that long offseason, again, is why, another one reason why, football's so great. I feel like baseball just ended 15 minutes ago, and we're already got pitchers and catchers reporting this week. Scarcity matters in life, folks, okay? That's why I always say, people are like, how could you not want more football? Didn't like the 17th game. Didn't need that. It's okay to have a little bit of, you know, like scarcity is what makes things great sometimes. Hockey's the same way. I love hockey, but man, the offseason's like 10 minutes long and they're already playing again. Like, you don't ever get to miss it. Football, it's a state of mind just as much as it is an actual thing. Like, the next season, late July, that feels like it's a million years from now, right now. But, and that sucks right now, but that feeling is also what will make it feel so good when it does start to happen again, when the calendar turns and we get through the late summer, and then it's training camp, then it's preseason. It's one of the things when I was a kid that always made back to school, because you know how summer break, you're having fun, that, oh man, school starting. I never minded school starting, because it meant it was August or September, and it was football season, and I was excited about that, both as a fan and then as a player when I started playing in, you know, middle school and then high school. Like, football season, you know, like, it's a long way off right now. We're as far away as we're going to get from the new one. But we've got Joe Bucks Fan, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Bucks coverage. And it's not – Joe Bucks Fan's a better website in the offseason than it is during the season. During the season, you got the – offseason now, this is when Joe Bucks Fan shines the most. So keep it there all offseason long. There's always news. There's always new articles. The Joes do a hell of a job maintaining it. It's the best for a reason. Like I always say, it's a privilege for me. I could do this podcast on my own and post it on my Twitter feed or something. But to have those guys bring me into the fold and put it on their website, it's the best place for Bucks fans. It's Buccaneer Fans Central, basically. It's a huge privilege for me, and I appreciate it every day. So, like I said, there's all these landmarks during the offseason. We'll start talking draft. We'll start talking combine. Then there'll be free agency. The schedule release. They'll be fun. The Bucks. You know, they could be playing another overseas game. We'll see. There are nine Europe games, or nine foreign games. Some of them aren't Europe. There's South America. Now there's Australia, Rams 49ers. But basically, there's nine of those games this year. So, what does that mean? That means 18 teams, and a couple teams may play, like the Jags have played in two of them. So let's say the Jags or a couple teams play in two. That's still half the league, right, that are going to play in an international game. Even if it's not a home game, it could be one of your road games. So there's a decent chance the Bucks might be playing in one of those, and it has been a couple years. What was it, 2022 or 2023 when they played the Seahawks in Munich? So I don't know if that'll cycle back through again or not, but we'll keep an eye out for that and you know, get little inklings of things here and there. and we're going to get through it. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I'm going to use this show, for those of you that are not just Bucks fans, but Tampa sports fans. I mean, it's always going to be a Bucks first show. But I'm going to use this show as we go through the offseason, more so than in offseasons past, to talk about lots of things. It's called the free stretch for a reason, okay? So I'm going to use this show to talk about a lot of things in Tampa Bay sports, whether it's the Lightning or the Ray, here and there, or just issues in general that I feel apply to a sports fan in general, and specifically a Tampa Bay sports fan. That's what this show is going to be for. And I always love hearing from you guys. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. That's BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Like I told you before, same thing, blue sky, all that stuff, whatever it is, you've got it. So until then, folks, again, sorry I didn't have a couple of other shows here throughout the past few weeks, but we are back. We'll be on top of things. We're going to have a lot of fun, and the offseason might be beginning, but it's always our season here on the Free Stretch. So thanks again to the Joes for having me on their website, the best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, TV, internet, or radio, joebucksfan.com. Thanks to all of you for listening. The weather's warming up in the Tampa Bay area, thankfully. My God, I hated that cold weather. But it's going to be a beautiful weekend. Some of you, it might be a three-day weekend. Be safe, have fun, take care of yourselves. I'll talk to you next week. And no matter how the Bucks finish, first, last, win, lose, draw, Super Bowl or not, it's always great to be a Buccaneer fan. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.